Hi, and welcome to What the Phalange, the podcast where we watch every episode of Friends, discuss it, deconstruct it, and fan over it, one episode at a time.
My name is Emily, pronouns she and her.
My name is Quinn, pronouns zizier or they, them.
This week we're talking about Season 1, Episode 9, the one where Underdog gets away. This episode aired on November 17th, 1994. It was written by Jeff Greenstein and Jeff Strauss, and directed by James Burrows.
We also know this one as the one where Joey isn't allowed home for Thanksgiving because his family thinks he has an STI, Ross talks to a fetus, and Monica makes Thanksgiving dinner for a bunch of ungrateful friends.
All right, so let's get into it.
Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back, everyone.
So, this episode...
We've got a lot. Before we get into things, we wanted to take a moment to talk a little bit about some heavy stuff, I guess you could say.
Yeah. We've just been sort of running into, I guess, a question that keeps coming up with every episode. And now coming on the first Thanksgiving episode of Friends, which is going to happen every year. We're sort of having to, like, figure out how to not let the show set the pretense for what we talk about fully. Because the show is inherently problematic in the way that it erases so many things, right? And that's, like, a very common issue with pop culture, right? Mm-hmm. This Friends is erasing any sort of diversity. It's erasing Indigenous people altogether. There's no concept of, like, people with disabilities in this show and non-binary folk, you know? Yeah. So I think that we keep asking ourselves, how do we go about talking about diversity when what we're doing is using this podcast to talk about...
These issues.
Yeah.
Like the lack of representation. Yeah. The issue of the lack of representation in the media we consume.
And we're, like, using Friends as, like, that medium to talk about these things, but then when it doesn't even exist, how do we keep coming back to it? Yeah. And we started off with sort of really wanting to include at the forefront of every single one of our podcasts, like a reference to a piece of media or pop culture or something that was diversified that we felt like somehow related, like people, our audience would, if they're listening to this podcast, would probably possibly have an interest in this as well. But we want to, like, moving forward, more integrate things into it.
The conversation. But it becomes one of those things where it's like, how do we talk about, you know, Indigenous people's representation in media when they never show up in Friends? There's not a single Indigenous person that we know of that shows up in Friends. And we don't want to only talk about Indigenous people in the Thanksgiving episodes, you know, talking about colonization, because that's an issue in itself and could also be, like, triggering for people to only ever hear them being talked about when it comes in the context of colonization. So that's an issue. And we also only don't want to only talk about BIPOC when they are in the show in general, because then we're never going to talk about BIPOC because they're not in the show very often. And so it's like, we want to encourage you to deconstruct the media you're consuming, as well as, like, you know, encourage ourselves to deconstruct the media we're consuming. But if the media we're consuming doesn't, you know, represent or doesn't have representation, then it's not just a matter of deconstructing the current media we're consuming, but, like, changing and diversifying the media that we are consuming overall, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think that, like, this has been a conversation from day one, or even pre-day one, if you consider our first podcast day one. like, it's been, like, an ongoing conversation that we've been having in the background. And then coming to this episode, we sort of feel like now it's, like, a dialogue that we want to open up with our audience. And sort of say, like, because coming into this episode, we don't have it all figured out. It's, like, this ongoing conversation that we're having, and we don't have it all figured out. And also keeping in mind that not only is this podcast costing us money right now to produce.
Yeah.
We are in a deficit, folks.
Support us on Patreon.
And also just creating the content with what we do know and the bit of research that we're doing, it already takes up a very large chunk of our time. Like, we're probably spending about, like 20 hours each a week on this podcast.
Yeah.
That's all. And unpaid, obviously.
You know, we want this to also be a learning process for us. So it's like, how do we find a balance between the two? And, you know, how do we go forward talking about things? You know, one of the things that we brought up was, you know, this conversation, this episode is all about the first Friends Thanksgiving, you know, and mm-hmm. how, you know, we've been thinking for a long time, not just for this episode, of doing land acknowledgements in our podcast to recognize that we're on unceded Indigenous territory. But how do we do that in a way that's not just like, you know, only talking about it during Thanksgiving episodes? Should we include it in our show notes? Should it be something we do at the beginning? But we also don't want it to be a tokenizing experience or a, you know, performative experience. So how can we have these conversations about diversity and representation and, you know, white supremacy, literally, mm-hmm. without, you know, in a way that's productive and not just, you know, kind of...
Yeah, because the show inherently erases and is, like, part of a white supremacist capitalist nature, us not acknowledging these externalities that don't exist within the show is us just passively, like...
giving into that.
Yeah, and passively participating
mm-hmm.
in white supremacy.
Yeah.
And so... And the marginalization and erasure of many other folks as well. And so it's sort of like, it's been an interesting process because we didn't have to think about this before going into the podcast fully. We sort of like, we started and then we were like, oh wait, what about this and this and this? Mm-hmm. And it kind of has grown. And so
which is, you know, a note on our privilege.
Oh,
in
yeah,
ways
totally.
In which we don't have to think about these things unless we're talking about them, which is like super, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And then also part of it is like us going into it and looking specifically at certain things. Like, we wanted to deconstruct the problematic queerness of the show,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's just such an iconic show and there's so much queerness in the show and they do it so arguably poorly.
Yeah. And like, as being two queer people and Quinn being trans, we feel like we can come into those conversations from a place of experience and how these things directly affect us. And they also show up in the show a lot. There's a lot of gay jokes. There's a lot of like trans jokes. There's a lot of things like that. Even in this episode, there's a trans joke, you know? So it's like, it's easy for us to have these conversations about topics that we know.
And also it was kind of with the intention of doing it for ourselves, like mm-hmm. recognizing that this is like a central piece of pop culture within our lives that have shaped the way that we think. And it would be healthy for us to actually take the time to go through it one episode at a time and deconstruct it, because the reality is, like, I'm trans and I can recognize that I have so much internalized transphobia, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like something that I need to do for my own mental health in order to like be able to live my life and be content with myself. And so like part yeah. of this project and this journey was really for ourselves. Mm-hmm. But then once you start having this platform and having these conversations and you start realizing that there's so many other things that cannot just go erased.
Yeah. Yeah. So we would love to hear from you and we want to know, you know, how can we approach these conversations in a way that is, one, not performative, two, that's not tokenizing, and three, that recognizes the fact that as two white people, we have no idea what racism is. You know, we can sympathize, but we cannot empathize because we do not experience racism. And so I think that is, it just needs to be a part of the discussion, and we would love, you know, input on how to go about having these discussions in a way that's healthy and safe and not harmful for
right.
people who are listening to our podcast.
Yeah. So right now what we're sort of starting to construct is like working to have a piece of pop culture that has diversity in it and including it within our conversation of each episode, like finding something that relates to the content mm-hmm. that we're going to be dissecting and using it as either a point of comparison or mm-hmm. A point of reference.
Like we did last episode with Living Single.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. However, I also think that we need to start weaving things like land acknowledgement within our podcast as well. Mm-hmm. And I think we're trying to, at this point, figure out if we want to have something in the show notes. Although a lot of people make jokes that no one actually reads the show notes. So maybe it should be more than just that.
Read our show notes.
Yeah, read our show notes. We always have some like resources in there.
And we're going to have so many resources for this episode because we're about to destigmatize a lot of shit.
What up?
What up?
And I think that, but then also maybe trying to include a land acknowledgement within the recorded aspect, but then also where, like, what land are we going to acknowledge?
New York? Like, Montreal? Yeah, where we're recording this?
It takes place in New York.
It's filmed in Los Angeles.
Yeah, but it's filmed in Los Angeles. And then we're recording right now in Montreal. Some of the podcasts were partly recorded because I was in Markham, Ontario. Mm-hmm. And then moving forward, we're hoping to, like, be traveling and be in separate areas and be able to continue this podcast.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Mm-hmm. We just thought that we would be open about the fact that this is, like, ongoing conversations that we're having and...
And we will make mistakes.
Yeah.
And we're super open to being called out and being called in and having a conversation about ways in which we can do this in a non-harmful as possible.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Yeah.
So if you have any input, especially if you are a person of color or an Indigenous person, please include us. If you are someone who is disabled and would like to also have input in how we're approaching this, one thing that I was sort of saying is that I, as a, you know, as a non-binary person, or a gender person falls within the umbrella of non-binary, would actually really appreciate it if literally every episode of a podcast of someone doing this, someone was like, let us note that there was no non-binary folks and no trans folks in this episode. Mm-hmm. And like just continuously reinstill that there is an existence, I am a person, and there's no representation here. Mm-hmm. And so maybe we'll start opening up that conversation on our social media outlets to sort of see what other people think mm-hmm. about that as well. If we were to just acknowledge that every single time.
And it's also so hard, too, on the flip side, because it's like, you also don't want to be acknowledged in a way that's tokenizing, right? So you don't want someone to just throw you into a show and be like, hey, look, we put this non-binary character in the show. Appreciate it, you know? But it's, mm-hmm. like, done poorly and, you know, not really, you know, written by maybe it's written by a cis person or it's, you know, not representative well or whatever, you know? So it's like, you know, it becomes a part of a larger discussion, you mm-hmm. know? And I think that what we need to do is recognize that when we're consuming media, we're constantly being thrown stereotypes or erasure of people that actually exist. And so even if we're not consciously bias or consciously racist or consciously discriminatory, you know, when we are constantly consuming white supremacy, when we're constantly consuming ableist ideas, when we're constantly consuming, you know, cis heteronormative ideas, we then go out into the world and we project these ideas, you know? So like,
okay. Yeah. So yeah. With that in mind, I think for today's episode, mm-hmm. let's point out that our cast here, or our friendly friend group, is celebrating Thanksgiving on a territory that was from that originally was the land of the Lenape people. And if you look in our show notes, we actually have a great about 5-minute video of about a year ago, the Lenape people had a powwow after 300 years, for the first time after 300 years of being kicked off of their land. Mm-hmm. And it's a really, really interesting video. And essentially the main person who's being interviewed, who is a very talented dancer At the powwow, she's wearing moccasins that were her ancestors that danced on this territory 300 years ago and has been passed down and then now have been reunited with the land, which I think is really cool.
That's very cool. All right, so let's keep getting into it. So it's going to be a heavy conversation today, so strap yourself in, folks. We're here for a bumpy ride.
But there's also some fun things, so, and that's also why we're doing this. So,
yeah. All right, so we're in Central Park. Again, cold open starts in Central Park. Rachel's talking to... Central Park. Central Park, thank you. Rachel is talking to Terry, her boss, who is medium at best.
This is our first time that we're being introduced to him, too. Yeah. And you're kind of like, oh, classic.
Classic. Terry telling Rachel she's a terrible waitress, and somehow implying that because of that she doesn't deserve a living wage, which is shit.
Yeah.
Everyone deserves a living wage.
Yeah. So I also want to point out that essentially the setup of the business here is that, and I think you don't really see it as much anymore because I am going to assume that Starbucks really pushed for like a lot of cafe changes, like, or like changing in the cafe world. But essentially what you're seeing is a cafe that doesn't really serve food. But they have
waitresses.
Mm-hmm. And this is something that existed more in the 90s. Like, I remember when I was much younger going to these independent type cafes and that being a much more of a consistent thing. But I can imagine one of the reasons why it's set up like that is because then they don't have to pay their workers a full minimum wage, because there's that server's wage, yeah. Yeah, server's wage, where it's basically a reduced wage because they expect the rest of your wage to be filled in by tips.
Mm-hmm.
So, A, tip your servers.
Yeah.
And then, B, I'm glad that this is less of a thing these days.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we also had three things that we wanted to talk about today, each.
Is that what we're doing? Okay, great. We're all over the place today. We got lots to talk about. Okay, so the things I want to talk about today are the stigma around STIs and the AIDS epidemic in the 80s and 90s, and how it's handled in this episode versus different media. I want to talk about how wonderful Susan is and how we meet the new Carol. And we're going to briefly talk about, or I want to briefly talk about, Thanksgiving and colonization.
Great.
What are the three things you want to talk about?
I feel like they overlap a lot.
Yeah.
Let's say all of those, plus I want to talk about this surprising fashion development in...
Ooh, interesting.
I know, right? I'm so excited.
2020 hasn't turned out like anyone has expected. For us, the current pandemic left us in an existential crisis, wondering what the heck we're doing with our lives. And when is a better time to start a podcast than when you're not sure what you're doing with your life?
When we finally made the decision to start our podcast, we spent a lot of time researching and debating which podcast host to use. You need a podcast host in order to have your podcast available in a variety of different directories, which is the reason you're probably listening to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. They all cost money, and they all have their strengths. But the reason we chose Buzzsprout to host us is because they are designed for new podcasters.
They have a variety of different tools to support you on your journey towards starting a new podcast. Knowing that creating this podcast is going to take a lot of our time and a lot of our money, we are particularly grateful that Buzzsprout offers an affiliate link marketplace, providing us with partnerships with quality brands that we can advertise. We don't get any money for the advertisements themselves. However, if you use our affiliate link in the show notes to purchase one of the products, we get a kickback at no additional expense to you.
So today we're repping Buzzsprout because we have the first-hand experience to say that it was the right decision to use them. And if you're thinking of starting a podcast because you're also experiencing a pandemic existential crisis, then you should do it. And you should use Buzzsprout and our affiliate link to do so. Following the link in our show notes lets Buzzsprout know that we sent you. It also gets you a $20 Amazon gift card if you sign up for a paid plan. And most importantly to us, it helps support our show.
All right, so we're back in Central Park. She is asking, Rachel's asking someone if she can get an advance on her tips, which is so cute.
It's so hilarious.
Have you ever gotten an advance on pay or tips or anything like that? Yeah, no,
me. No, either. I haven't.
Okay, so then Joey walks in. He is wearing makeup. And of course, how dare he wear makeup?
Oh my god.
And so he goes, "You're officially looking at Joey Tribbiani, actor slash model." And Chandler says, "His first transphobic, queerphobic joke of the day." He's like, "Really? Because I think you look like Joey Tribbiani, man slash woman."
Yep.
Because men can never wear makeup or they're women. That's bullshit. Yep. It's also just so stupid because, like, that joke is so terrible because, like, they're probably wearing makeup.
Yeah.
For this, while they're filming this episode of Friends, they are wearing makeup. So it's just like the joke is just like so weird in that, like,
but
at the same time, it's such a Chandler joke. Because again, Chandler's got all this internalized homophobia that we debunked last episode. So he's like seeing someone, a masculine dude, wear makeup makes him feel really uncomfortable because toxic masculinity.
And he's going to make fun of it. Joey is probably, and I'm going ahead now in the series, looking a big picture here. Joey's probably the one who's most consistently comfortable in his masculinity and most willing to explore things that are not stereotypically, air quotes masculine. Masculine.
Yeah.
And that's like...
And Chandler's going to consistently have a hard time with it.
Yeah, he's going to have such a hard time. Yeah. And both him and Ross are going to lace into him. And there'll be episodes where it kind of, like, gets to him a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a theme. Very strong theme in this show.
Anyway, so Monica's parents are not doing Thanksgiving because they're going to Puerto Rico. And so Monica's like, "I'm going to do my first Thanksgiving." And that's where we're at. Chandler is boycotting Thanksgiving, not for political reasons, which we should all do.
I know, right? But, you're almost there, but...
Almost there. But because his parents got divorced on Thanksgiving and it was terrible and he saw Thanksgiving in reverse by throwing it all up. And then Rachel is sad because she's trying to save money for Vail, right? We learned that. And then
that's the point of her trying to get an advance on her tips.
Yeah, and then I just want to say a thing. She breaks a cup and then she realizes that she actually has to owe money, super fucked because Rachel shouldn't legally have to pay for a broken cup if she breaks a cup at work.
That was totally more of a thing, again, in the 90s.
Ross is heading over to Carol's.
Yes. So he gets to Carol's. He's looking for a skull, which is just very funny.
Did you want to run through all of the Carol and Susan plotline in one big chunk right now?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that.
Okay. So, Susan's outfit is really cute. We find out in this episode that Carol is a teacher, and so she had borrowed Ross's skull for a class. And then you get a really, really nice and snarky Susan line here where she's like, "What does it look like?" And he's like, "Well, you know, like a face without skin." And she's like, "Yes, I'm familiar with the concept." Which, like, to be fair, asking what a skull looks like is legit, but I feel like she was more asking...
Like how big is it?
How big is it?
What, like, color tones is it? Like,
is it attached to a skeleton, or is it just a skull? Like, am I supposed to be looking in areas where you can store big things, or areas where you store small things?
Yeah, exactly. And, like, you know, when I went to school, you have, like, the white plastic fake skulls, and then you have, like... the real skulls that are kind of like a tone of like brown.
Yeah.
And you know, like they just, you know, you just look at different, you know.
Yeah.
Ross is unhelpful and then, you know, Susan gets back at him really well.
They're just both kind of snarky to each other. And I kind of like, Susan and Ross just have great rapport. Like they have awful rapport, but I mean in the sense that like
entertainment.
It's so great. you want to talk about Susan's outfit?
Yeah, I do, but my phone is not loading it. Anyway, I think the main point is that Susan got second place
in
terms of best outfit. Yeah,
that's super cute.
Which I thought was, like, pretty on point.
It's pretty 90s. And, like, she has great hair, too. I think I've said that before, but she's really great hair. Susan is, like, whatever. I say this every time Susan is in the show, but she's just my favorite person. And we get just such a great, great moment again. Like, there's just so many great Susan moments, but she... Ross goes, wow, you guys sure have a lot of books about being a lesbian.
Which I think is, like, for anyone who is queer, this is such a great, like, inside joke.
It's,
like, I feel like that line is, like, for us more than anything else, you know?
Yeah, because I definitely have books about queerness.
Yeah, and, like, let's take a moment to acknowledge the fact that, like, there is basically zero representation in media about being queer, and therefore...
Especially in the 90s.
Especially in the 90s. And that's where, quite often, books on being marginalized exist, when you just don't have the representation in mainstream world. If it's not considered normal, quote-unquote, there's more likely to, you know, buy books on learning how to be yourself.
Yeah, for sure. And then, Ross has the great line of, Susan has the great line of, you have to take a course, otherwise they don't let you do it. And then she gets, like, this smile where she's just like, yeah.
It's so, like, good.
So snarky. Susan is so solidified in her lesbianism.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah.
So Ross is upset. We're not upset, but he finds it so weird that Susan's talking to the fetus. And this is, like, a snippet into Ross's, like, superiority complex. Like, he's just, like, he, like, scoffs. Ross does a lot of scoffing.
Oh my god.
He's just like, yeah, like, that doesn't make any sense. So why would you talk to a fetus? And then, we said we're going to keep talking about it, right? Because then he decides that he is going to start talking to the fetus.
But probably only because he's being referred to... he's being referred to as Bobo the Sperm Guy, which we all know that that's not actually how they're referring to him, but it's clear that Susan is really just trying to dig at him a little bit.
Yeah.
She knows his insecurities.
Yeah.
Later on, he decides to go back, the next day or something, to talk to Susan's belly, the fetus.
And this week, Carol's belly.
Yeah, Carol's belly.
And we get a new Carol. So, like we said in the last episodes, Anita Barone has been playing Carol. But then in this episode, and then for the rest of the show, Jane Sibbett is playing Carol. And
I love her.
She's so great. Yeah. Not that I didn't love Anita Barone, but I just... This, to me, is who Carol is, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I find that this is actually really cute, where when he does start singing to the fetus, like, it starts kicking... And then I just think it's so cute how Susan, Carol, and Ross have this, like, really beautiful parenting, like, collective parenting moment.
Yeah.
And, like, there's not very many. But, like, this moment where they all have their hands on Carol's belly and they're just, like...
They're, like, united and excited for the same thing together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really great, you know, like, they could be a trifecta, but there is an animosity between Ross and...
Yeah,
Susan.
For, like, reasons we discussed in past episodes.
Okay,
So I guess we're back in Monica's apartment. She's preparing Thanksgiving dinner. Rachel didn't make the amount of money that she needed to make, so the friends pooled their money together, which I think is actually really cute. So she needed $100. And just for the record, $100 in 1994 is equivalent to $175-ish today. And which is interesting because then I went and took it a step further and I looked up flights, but from New York City to Vail, and they're about $250 Canadian. So that would make sense with, like, the amount of money she was trying to raise. It would make sense that, like, she needed about that much money to take a flight to Vail. So.
Oh, interesting. Well done, Emily. Also, 78% of our Instagram audience voted that they have pooled money to surprise a friend in the past.
That's cute.
Also, 56% of people have said that they have talked to a fetus.
Oh.
And 89% have said that they have felt a baby kick in a belly.
I felt Nora kick in her mom's belly.
No.
Nora's our niece, who I feel like we talk about every episode. So then the next scene we get into is the subway station scene, and the shit show begins. So...
Yeah. First of all, let's acknowledge the amazing outfit of Ross's past coworker.
And also, you mean Chandler's,
Joey's, yes.
Coworker. And also Joey's outfit himself.
Yeah. Joey has a great coat on.
A stellar outfit.
Also, I just double checked on my phone. This outfit that his coworker is wearing actually tied for second place with Susan.
Excellent. Yeah.
It's an amazing outfit with that scarf wrapped around and both hanging out behind her.
Yeah, the little beret.
The beret and, like, the hoop earrings. Like, I just wish
it wasn't on such a rude lady.
I know, right?
Okay, so this is where we get into it. So we... Joey starts to talk to this old coworker of his, and then she sees this poster behind him, and it says, "What Mario isn't telling you, you know, VD, you never know who has it," or whatever.
Okay, and instead of going for drinks with him, she sees it and takes off.
Yeah, so, one, she is an idiot, because she needs to know that, obviously, he's a model, and he's in an ad.
Yeah. Okay, like put a pin in everything else. This is not valid on a very basic level.
Very basic level. And two, it is one of the most fucked up things that happens in this show, in the fact that this woman doesn't even want to get a drink with Joey, because he may or may not have an STI.
Just to clarify, to make the link here, VDs, basically the language, like what we call, was called VD back then was called STD, and then is now today considered or talked about as an STI.
So VD stands for venereal disease. Exactly. STI was sexually transmitted diseases, and then they moved it from sexually transmitted disease to sexually transmitted infections in order to further remove the stigma around them.
Yeah. And also because the difference between a disease and an infection is when a bacteria or even like a fungus or whatnot has infected the body and is affecting it, but there is no cellular change within the body. So let's take COVID right now. When you get infected with COVID, it is also a disease because it is actually affecting the lung tissue and damaging the cells within your lungs and your whole airway passageway. Okay. And so that makes it a disease. Whereas STIs, except for very specific situations, they are actually just infections. You very often can go get, well, depending on which one, there's a whole slew.
Yeah.
But essentially, a lot of them you get treated for, and you can go about the rest of your life and not really be a big deal.
Yeah.
Except for the stigma that comes with them.
Yeah, which is, like, way bigger than the STI itself. So let's talk a little bit about STIs in 1994. Okay, so in 1994, STIs were a huge thing that were happening because of the AIDS epidemic. So in the 80s, the AIDS epidemic was happening. And actually in 1994, when this episode was released, AIDS was the number one cause of death in Americans in the year of 1994. So that's pretty big.
Can we back up for a second?
Mm-hmm.
So STIs, one of them is HIV.
Not all of them.
Yeah. So there's a variety of... And so in this episode, it's sort of insinuating that Joey has some STI. Yeah. It's like undecided which one. It's sort of like this, like...
General...
Let's just stigmatize everything. Let's just be like, everything is bad.
Yeah.
You know? And that's that.
Yeah.
Very fear-mongering.
Totally. And his family doesn't even want to have Thanksgiving with him, which is really, really fucked.
Yeah.
Like, just super, super fucked up. Like, but the reason why I'm bringing up specifically HIV and AIDS is because in the 90s, this was, like, a really, really... It was super stigmatized. Like, at the time, they didn't even know if... I remember watching an Oprah episode where a guy came on the show and he was HIV positive and they didn't want him going into a public pool for fear that he could spread HIV in a public pool, which, for the record, you cannot spread HIV in a public pool. You can't spread HIV from sneezing. You can't spread HIV from coughing. You can't
Or sharing a fork with someone.
Or sharing a fork.
Or making out.
Or making out. You know, anything like that, you can't. So, yeah. Okay, so then...
And do you want to break apart HIV versus AIDS?
Great.
Because a lot of people will use them interchangeably.
Okay, so AIDS and HIV are not the same thing. AIDS is often sometimes referred to as HIV stage 3. So you get to that stage when you have a certain number of a cell count that's so low that it's really affected your immune system to the point that they've now classified you as having AIDS. So you can't actually contract AIDS. You can contract HIV, and HIV develops into AIDS. So that's one thing to clear up. Another thing to clear up is, okay, I want to talk a little bit about something that they used to use in the media, and I was doing a ton of research. This is why now we're like, yo, we're going to start giving sex ed classes, okay? Like, so the media in the 90s used to refer to specifically getting AIDS as being able to get AIDS from, they called it the four H's, which is really fucked up when you hear what these four H's are.
Oh my god.
Okay, first of all, the first one's not so bad. Hemophiliacs. Okay, so if you need blood transfusions, a lot of the times people would contract AIDS through blood transfusions before they could, before they knew how to properly test for AIDS before doing blood transfusions. The second one was heroin users. So they would, it's another common way, but they were basically saying that, like, if you're a heroin user, you're gonna get AIDS. The next one was homosexual men. So that's what another H was. And the fourth H was Haitians. Yes. Let's take a moment.
Whoa.
So if you fell into the category of those four H's, you were, like, ostracized from society in the 90s for potentially having AIDS. So it's, like, fucked beyond belief, this concept. Okay.
Whoa. I did not know that.
Yeah. But on the flip side, it was super scary in 1994 to contract HIV because it could potentially lead to AIDS and death. And in 1994, when this episode came out, they didn't actually have a lot of treatment. They had AZT, which you could take, but then they realized that AZT was better suited for cancer, and it actually, your body started to get, like, kind of immune to AZT, and so it didn't work in the same way.
Right, yeah.
So it would help prolong it a little bit. It helped prolong life, but it didn't necessarily prolong it for a long period of time. So everyone who was contracting HIV, most of them would develop into AIDS, which is why there was such a high amount of people dying from it. But then there's a flip side. I'm sorry, I'm talking so much. I want you to get into it too. But then there's a flip side of the fact that, like, the reason why these quote-unquote four H's came out was that they were finding that these people were the most likely to get it. And the frustration with that is that people who are homosexual men in the 90s, heroin users, and people of color, or so in this case Haitians that they're referring to of the four H's, usually had way less access to any form of medical treatment, any form of, like, medical services in general.
Healthcare, yeah.
And they were super stigmatized already when it came to getting treatment for anything. So it was like they were already ostracized before the AIDS epidemic started, and then they were pretty much not fucking cared about or thought about at all throughout this whole epidemic, and they were like, like, you guys are the bad people and you're gonna infect us good white straight people. Like, literally, that's what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was a lot of fighting for people who had HIV to be a part of the process of, like, the decision making and finding a treatment for it. But yeah, there was very much, like, an ostracization and being like, no, you're not gonna be part of this. But on another note was very interesting is that if anyone remembers what Degrassi High is, which is a Canadian show that aired in the 90s, which was designed to be an educational show, that basically had like some amazing diversity in it. And they took on a lot of really mainstream topics that needed to be, like, talked about and unpacked a little. And they turned it into a very interesting, very highly viewed, show for teens. And they actually basically had a story arc of a character who gets HIV. And what's really interesting and groundbreaking about this is that the character was a white, cis, straight guy who got it from his girlfriend, who
got it from her boyfriend, her ex-boyfriend.
And essentially it just follows him in that journey of, like, finding it out and, having to live with it and, like, living within the stigmatization that does exist and not being able to feel like he can come out and tell the people in his life because all of them are basically kind of have the narrative, or do have the narrative, that HIV is your punishment for either being homosexual or
doing drugs, or being like quote unquote dirty. Like, that's like a big thing. And even like, even the language we use around STIs is so problematic. Like, when you say, like, I'm clean, like, as in I don't have an STI, but then that refers to someone having an STI as being, what, dirty?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, this really, really fucked up kind of, like, even as, you know, our society has really moved towards sex positivity in so many ways, and I'm so grateful for that. Mm-hmm. There's so many ways in which we're still behind in the ways that we refer to STIs, and honestly, it comes down to, like, a lot of conservative, patriarchal, like, ideas around sexuality, in the fact that, like, if it's not, you know, straight sex, if it's not with one partner, if it's not
married,
you know, then you shouldn't be having sex. Then you shouldn't be, like,
you then know, anything that happens is your fault and you deserve it.
And it's the consequence, like, you know, you have to pay the price of that.
Like, our society definitely has an obsession with the idea of punishment.
Yeah.
And this is just one of those symptoms of that.
Yeah.
So
I wanna say a thing before, maybe, I don't know if you wanted to move forward, but I wanna say one thing, which is, so in 1995, they actually developed ART, which is an antiretroviral therapy, which makes people who are HIV positive unable to transmit HIV to HIV negative people. Studies have officially proven that if someone who is HIV positive is taking their medication regularly, it is virtually impossible to get HIV from that person. So, which is wild, because I think that a lot of people don't know that.
No.
Like, honestly, like, I feel like I learned about this maybe a year ago, but I didn't actually fully know that. So people who are now, this is, like, wild that this medication exists, because people who were basically, once you got HIV positive in the early 90s, it was almost a death sentence, unfortunately. And now people who are getting HIV positive are living full length lives, same lifespan as people who are HIV negative, you know? And so, and then they also have another medication, which is called
PrEP. And that's for people to take before having sex, possibly with someone who does have HIV or is HIV positive, and that will essentially stop your body from being able to be infected by HIV.
And it's not just for sex. Like, if someone is a heroin user, you know, they can take PrEP as well in order to minimize their chance of getting HIV, or virtually remove it. From what I know, it's, like, pretty high in terms of, so. All that to say that if someone is HIV negative and they're dating someone who's HIV positive, and the person who's HIV positive is taking medication and the person who's HIV negative is taking their medication, the person who's HIV negative is not going to get HIV. So I think that is a huge stigma that we need to remove in society, because there is still this fear around HIV, when really, like, there's so much development in the ways that we have, like, the, you know, medical world has moved forward.
Yeah, and let's, like, take a moment to actually, like appreciate
that's amazing
medical technology and how amazing things like vaccines are and these types of medications. Because we could go down a whole road of that.
Yeah,
but it's just it's just, no matter how many little issues that could possibly come with taking the medication or taking a vaccine, the reality is that, like, the what it weighs out is so incredible, you know?
Yeah.
Like, our world doesn't have smallpox anymore, guys.
Yeah, it's wild. yeah, but anyways, it's also, like, anyways, just going back to the fact that, like, Joey's family doesn't want him to come home for Thanksgiving because he has VD is also, like, incredibly messed up. Like, it's just,
Yeah.
It's not even, like, it's not even fathomable how not okay that is. And what's unfortunate is that this is a thing that really, really happened in the 90s. And what upsets me is that Friends could have used this as a moment to educate. And they didn't use this as a moment to educate. They used it as a moment to further stigmatize and further ostracize people with STIs. Like, rather than using this as, like, a moment to be, like, you know, Joey having a conversation with his parents on the phone, being like, there's no way that this is a thing. Like, you guys don't have to worry about it. Like, blah, 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 blah. Like, you know, you don't have to worry. Even if I did have VD, you don't have to worry about this and this and this. But, like, instead, they just made it a butt of a bunch of jokes throughout the episode. And, like, it's just upsetting, you know? So,
yeah.
I think that if you are a listener, I think that we encourage you to check out our show notes because we're going to have a bunch of links around destigmatizing STIs and the importance of that and the way it relates to having a sex-positive feminist society. We need to destigmatize STIs. That's just part of it. Yeah.
Agreed.
All right. Shall we move on?
Yes. So now Joey is having, has decided to have Thanksgiving dinner with everyone else.
And there's three kinds of potatoes.
Okay, you say it all cutesy, but, like, yeah, oh so my god. So,
as someone who loves potatoes, though, I'd be so stoked if I went to a Thanksgiving dinner and there were three kinds of potatoes to choose from.
Everyone's wanting their potatoes the way that their mom makes the freaking potatoes. Mm-hmm. I find this so cute. Freaking annoying.
I think it's cute.
Okay, I am also, I am not super into potatoes. They're not my favorite part of a meal. I don't really care how they are. I just find it interesting that, like, how nostalgic potatoes are for everyone. And I think this is actually a fairly universal thing, except for I don't care.
I guess I find it cute in the fact that, like, they basically insinuate that this is the first time all the friends are having a Thanksgiving as, like, with their chosen family versus with their family, you know, or their blood family, you know? So it's like, I find it cute that they're like, these are these elements of home that I want to incorporate into this, like, traditional family meal, you know? Which we'll get into the issues around Thanksgiving in a moment.
Their first Thanksgiving with their chosen family.
Yeah, it's super cute.
So, yeah. But, okay, here's the thing, though, is that I'm frustrated with the idea, again, looping back to when Chandler needed to borrow a pan from Monica to make breakfast for his date.
Right.
You know, looping back to that, where it's like Monica is being made this, like, domestic mother for the group. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, again, she literally buys all the groceries for Chandler's fixins, as she calls it.
Yeah.
She buys all the grilled cheese essentials and
she buys his groceries.
She buys his groceries for his Thanksgiving meal that he's not eating with them. And he's going to go next door and make his own food for once. But she has to buy him all the things for it.
Question. When Monica was leaving, do you think she said got the keys? Or do you think she asked got the keys?
Okay. I actually have a vivid memory from the first time I ever saw this episode.
Oh, interesting.
And I definitely, and maybe it was by the way that Rachel responded of being sort of like, okay, like, it's clear how Rachel heard Monica, that mm-hmm. I also was like, oh, Monica was saying that she had the keys.
Mm.
When listening back a bunch of times, I think it's something that can definitely go either way. So,
what do our people say?
Yeah, okay. In our poll, 57% of people said, what do you think?
She asked.
Yeah, 57% said ask, and 43% said that she just said it.
That's a pretty split. That's a pretty close split.
So close.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because, like, I also feel as though if I were to leave the house and I shouted, got the keys, like, I would follow up on that a little bit, you know?
Yeah, but again, I think this also throws back to that narrative where Monica is the responsible one, and she's the one that it falls on her shoulders.
Everyone always assumes she's got her shit together.
Yeah, and that she, you know, she's the one taking care of everyone mm-hmm. and is basically, like, the big picture of everything mm-hmm. and has to plan everything and have the foresight for everything. And
Yeah, and it almost bothers me that she does have this, like, breakdown where she's like, why? Because I always have to be the one that takes care of everything. Everything's my responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. And then, like, no one apologizes to her for that.
No, I know.
No one's like, oh my god, you're right, Monica. I can't believe none of us, like, helped contribute to this Thanksgiving dinner, or, like...
Or, you know, you have the two other men who say this. One is... Basically, Chandler goes, only dogs can hear you now.
Yeah, super not productive.
And then you have Ross, who walks in and goes, this doesn't smell like moms.
Yeah, what a dick.
Like, first of all, go to therapy. Figure that out. Like, yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah. Ross has got mad mama issues. I actually find, so I wrote a note and I was like, this episode is kind of like... blue. Like, it's kind of sad. Like, a lot of, like, shitty life things happen in this episode, and they talk about, like, a lot of kind of, like, it feels like a very shitty moment. Like, this episode is kind of, like, life's kind of shit, you know? Like, yeah. Everyone's kind of sad and upset, and I don't know.
I think that... Yeah, I think it is kind of cute when it all gets turned around. Like, the plot line is actually quite cute when it all gets turned around, and then now everyone is eating grilled cheese with Chandler and sort of, like, coming down to, like, quote-unquote, what the holiday is all about.
Yeah.
Which...
Let's get into that. Let's finish the episode with this. Yeah.
And they end up having a lovely time and making the best out of what it is and sort of...
Yeah.
And I think it is a cute birth to this, like, you know, season-to-season tradition where they have a Thanksgiving episode. And they all share Thanksgiving together, yeah. You know? And I find that kind of cute. And how, like, finally Chandler is okay with celebrating Thanksgiving to an extent, and more throughout the seasons, you know, from this one little thing, you know? Like,
yeah.
But keeping that in mind, this is Thanksgiving, 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I want to take a moment to point out that it wasn't until, well, we have conflicting... sources saying either 1996 or 1998 that the last residential school closed down.
So last North American residential school closed down. So
yeah. And so if you don't know what a residential school is, it's essentially a key component of the genocide of Indigenous culture that happened in Canada and the United States. And the concept was that they basically... stole kids away from their parents, Indigenous kids away from their parents, and put them in boarding schools and stripped them of all of their cultural
traditions
in order to try to actually fully erase Indigenous culture from...
And assimilate them to, like, quote-unquote Christian values. So... In these boarding schools, they weren't allowed to speak their language. There was just, like, no... They were taught history from the perspective, the white supremacy history, basically. And it was a total stripping and basically genocide of Indigenous culture.
And as you can imagine, extremely traumatic.
And also, like, not to mention the fact, you know, we're talking about the fact that they were stripping culture and trying to assimilate these children to, like, white Christian values. But on top of that, that is horrible in itself. But then on top of that, there were also, like, massive amounts of cases of physical and sexual abuse of these children as well. And these kids were not allowed to contact their parents while they were at school either. And again... To give context...
They weren't allowed to speak their language. They weren't... Yeah. Yeah.
And to give context again, this episode aired in 1994, and residential schools in Canada still existed in 1994. So when this episode came out, residential schools and children who were Indigenous were still being tortured in these schools.
Yeah.
So...
It's really easy for us to be like, to see this history and sort of like think that it is so far away, but then when we overlay... some pieces of mainstream pop culture that we still go back to all the time and recognize that, like, the beginning, the first episode of Friends that ever aired, it wasn't going to be until at least two or three or four or five Thanksgivings later that these schools will have been completely shut down. Yeah. And that is just...
horrifying.
Yeah. It just it just puts things into context a little bit more of why the complete erasure of Indigenous folks within this episode is so, like, horrifying. Yeah. You know?
So I think the reason why we're pointing this out is that we want to talk a little bit about why it is problematic to celebrate Thanksgiving as a white person in Canada and the United States. So this isn't to say that you can't have a great long weekend with your family and eat delicious foods. That's not what we're trying to say. But I think it's important to recognize that a lot of the time in which we talk about Thanksgiving, we talk about it as this like moment of peace between Indigenous people and the settlers or the pilgrims in the United States. And it was like this moment of like peace between the two of them. And they came together and shared a meal when like in reality, Indigenous people long before pilgrims, quote unquote, or settlers or colonizers came to what we know as North America now, they were having traditional
harvest
festivals at around this time of year in or like the time of year of Thanksgiving in order to celebrate like as their own culture. And so
it was already like an Indigenous tradition.
Yeah. And so then white it's now came. Been co-opted.
Yeah.
First of all, that in the States specifically, the time that they're talking about this like first Thanksgiving, this peaceful Thanksgiving, like prior to that, Indigenous people were already captured as slaves, and a whole slew of Indigenous people were already murdered and killed off through disease that white people brought to North America. So you can't just like look at it and just be like, oh wow, like this is what Thanksgiving is all about, when you're not recognizing the ways in which Indigenous people are still persecuted today. The number of incarcerated Indigenous people in Canada is about 4 or 5 times the actual population of Indigenous people living in Canada. Missing and murdered Indigenous women was recently declared like a genocide, and yet it's not really talked about. And there is just like, there's people living in Canada today who do not have access to clean drinking water because they live on Indigenous reserves that are not respected by the Canadian government. Pipelines are being built through Canada through Indigenous land. So it's like, we can't look at Thanksgiving and be like, oh, this moment of peace, and we're like, and just totally close our eyes and not look at the ways in which Indigenous people are still, to this day, right now, while you're listening to this podcast, severely impacted by colonization and genocide.
Yeah, and it's not a holiday of peace. What it actually is a Indigenous tradition co-opted by white people before they tried to erase it out of Indigenous culture. And it's not a moment of peace because it was actually a moment where white people pat their self on the back and be like, look, we berated and murdered people into acting like something is peaceful because we gave them no other choice.
Yeah. You know, when Thanksgiving comes this year, you know, and it's in a couple months, maybe think of the ways in which, you know, we as settlers are right now on unceded Indigenous territory, and we, whether or not we, you know, are consciously doing it, are perpetuating white supremacy and genocide if you are a white settler in this country.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you are Indigenous and or are someone who's very knowledgeable of Indigenous histories, please, and you have, if you take issue to anything that we've said, or you feel like you want certain things pointed out that we didn't, or you find things that are wrong with what we said, please
let us know.
Like, we would be very grateful to hear from you and to correct ourselves or put in more information in future episodes.
Yeah. So that's it. That's all, folks. We didn't talk a lot about things.
But no, but I never gave the
outfits.
The outfit, the number one outfit for the episode. You guys, I was so excited about this. Is Chandler's Chandler's outfit.
What?
Yeah. The outfit he's wearing when he's doing the horrible thing of making fun of Joey for wearing makeup, he's wearing this amazing blazer and like black collar shirt that's just a little open. His hair is like swoopy but like pulled back. And he just...
Check it out on our Instagram if you follow us on Instagram. All right, so this is this week's episode. Like we said, we feel like this episode was pretty heavy. There was a lot to unpack. A lot of, like, upsetting things happened in this episode.
And also, like, we just, I think we really struggled in understanding how to approach it and talk about it. Mm-hmm. I think that, yeah, it's a lot, guys. To remind you all again, this podcast costs us money and time. So we'd really appreciate it if you went over to our Patreon page and gave us a little bit of a patronage, starting at just as low as like $2 per month. We have different tiers and you can be part of different things like Netflix watch parties, so us watching the episode together and we can get your input on it there and then.
While we're watching it live.
Yeah, and then we record right after, so that might, you know, depending on what kind of conversations we have while watching it, maybe we'll include like your input in on the podcast itself. And then we even have stickers now, guys. So if you want to pledge, you can get a sticker from us. And then we're also going to have full-length episodes, like uncut versions of our episodes on our Patreon. We basically end up recording for like sometimes almost 2 hours, and then we cut it down to be a reasonable podcast amount of time. And so if you want to hear us getting into the details of everything that we talk about, head on over to our Patreon pledge and support us, and we would be so happy to have you in our little growing community.
Yeah. All right, so follow us on Instagram at WTPhalange, and you can follow me on Instagram at EmilyBYoga.
And me at Quinn K. Brunette.
Keep deconstructing the media you consume and diversifying the media you consume. Stay soft, friends.
And check out the show notes.
Check out our show notes.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of What the Phalange. If you're picking up what we're putting down, please consider supporting us on Patreon, leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, and or sharing us with all of your friends on social media.
You can find us at whatthephalangepodcast.com, email us at wtphalange@gmail.com, DM us on Twitter at wtphalangepod, or follow us on Instagram at wtphalangepodcast. All links will be included in the show notes below.
Want to get in touch with us each individually? You can find Emily on Twitter as EmilyB__, and that's Emily with an IE.
And you can find Quinn at TheBasicNB on Instagram. Keep deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume.